The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
Walk right up to the side.
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I'm a survivor.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
This is JC and Morgan. Welcome, everybody. Good Monday morning to you. Yes, we do broadcast this live, although many of you listen to it later on at your convenience throughout the week. That is the beauty of modern technology. He's JC Sherbert. Speaking of modern technology, he's in Chicago. I am Mike Morgan. I'm actually in Gainesville, getting ready for a couple of things, a basketball game in a couple of days, and going to the third annual Spurrier Awards here tonight, which I'll get into later. Also, speaking of later, we've got Tom Luganville, our buddy, joining us later to talk about a lot of stuff. We've got, we're trying to book these guests, and the great thing is they want to do it. The not so great thing is working everybody's schedule is always it's like a jigsaw puzzle. But Ross Dellinger will be with us. He was supposed to be with us today. He thought we meant tomorrow. Pete Thamel will be with us next week. He's at the NFL Combine. So we'll get all these things lined up, but Tom Luganville, as always, is one of our, I guess you could say, friends of the JC and Morgan family. Always brings the heat. Him and Brando, like two of our favorites. And we'll have a lot to get into. We'll get into JC 5 in the final segment. JC, I was hosting a show in Atlanta last week, the afternoon show, Chuck and Chernoff with Chuck Oliver, who we need to get back on here too. As he likes to call himself, the king of college football. He does a great job covering college football. And typically this time of year, if you're hosting a show, it's a 4-hour show, and we don't take phone calls. You know, that's kind of like a crutch for a lot of hosts. You don't come prepared, just walk in. All right, let's go to the phones. Got Bill on a car phone. Billy, what's up?
Yeah, Chuck, they don't take calls, do they?
We don't take a single call. And the way that show is produced, like every segment, we tease to it, and we have an agenda. Like, we know what we're talking about. And so I've been filling in on that show for years. And typically this time of year, right, the Super Bowl's come and gone. College football playoffs come and gone. It used to be where I would say 80% of the show would be NFL draft. I mentioned the Combine is this week. And, of course, you know, the Falcons are sitting there with the 8 pick, and there's talk about trades, and, you know, you've got the possibility of a trade for Justin Fields, which obviously would affect where you are, JC. Will the Falcons make a Bryce Young-type trade and give away 2 first-round picks, 2 second-round, you know, mortgage your whole future on perhaps taking the number 1 pick in Caleb Williams? There's a lot of moving parts, and you know I have a weird obsession with the NFL draft, have since the early 90s. So I'm always up for talking that. And then a lot of it would be Braves, spring training. But we talked a ton of college football. And the reason is, and it goes back to what we say so often on this show, there is no more off season. There just is not. And there are some major things going on behind the scenes. I mean, the fact that, JC, I don't know how you took this. When I heard all of a sudden after the, whatever you call it, playoff committee, blah, 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 when they decided to go with 12 in the 5+7 model, that we knew. And then all of a sudden this little thing comes out. They actually were talking about 14 teams. And they were talking about the possibility of 4 automatic bids for certain conferences. Well, we know what those certain conferences are. It's the SEC and the Big Ten. But you could have as many as 8 automatic bids from those 2 leagues, and then the other 6 will figure out. Brando said it on our show a year ago. He's like, you guys wait. When they go to 12, it's going to be 16 2 years later.
Yeah.
Well, they're already talking about 14, so he might have been a prophet in that respect. But between that and all the subject of the portal, now there's discussion, can we just get rid of all that stuff in December in terms of player acquisition, just or have it right before the conference championship games? JC, I know you have a close eye on that because you still cover recruiting somewhat.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, these are major moving parts that we have going on right now in college football in the quote-unquote slow part of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. That there's a tweet from Josh Pate that I'm going to get into either with Luge or the JC5 that talks about conference semifinals and things of that nature. In other words, Big Ten SEC going to 20 to 24 teams, dividing into divisions, and then structuring what would be a smaller college football playoff that way, where there's play-ins on the conference level. I think once they get past 16 teams, Mike, I'm kind of in favor of that, just because I think it's, you know, what other sport has 24 teams, 1 through 24, and goes one? The tiebreakers are going to end up being the source of controversy, and these days everybody's so happy. You know, the Big Ten or SEC may get sued one day over an athletic director vote for the conference number 2. I mean, it's crazy. We live in a crazy world, and I think it makes it even crazier. But there's stuff like that going on. You mentioned the calendar. I guess the only moving back high school signing to before the conference championship games.
Uh-oh. JC just went Han Solo. He got frozen. Was that Jabba the Hutt who did this? Oh, he's more than frozen. He be gone. He's coming back. Lando Calrissian is going to help him. That's about as many Star Wars references as I have. I'm not exactly a Star Wars nerd and haven't seen any of those movies in 20 years. There he is back. We thawed him out just like they did Han Solo.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was in the middle. I'm just going to talk in smaller, shorter sentences now until I actually.
You sound great. You sound great.
Well, yeah, I got my mic set up good. Camera looks good. But I actually went to Verizon, Mike, and got their home internet. They're giving like a free trial or something. And so I'm going to do it today. I should have done it before, JC. But had a nice, restful weekend, right? So I'm going to get back to where I have my own 5G. In my office to connect to. And, you know, because we got boys and they get on game. Like nowadays, PlayStation, all that stuff, streaming, it all connects to your
soaks
your
up Wi-Fi. A lot of bandwidth.
Yeah. So my bad on that. But yeah, there's a lot going on. And with the calendar specifically, I don't know. Do I think moving the high school signing date back 2 weeks is going to matter? Probably not. There's very little activity that goes on then. What it does do is completely screw new coaching staffs, because they're going to actually take jobs on signing day. You know, I mean, think about this. It's going to back up all the coaching carousel stuff, which I think is an overrated topic. People get fired midseason, and you still, with very few exceptions, like an Urban Meyer, Ohio State kind of deal, very few exceptions that they not drag into December anyway. So, we'll see what happens there, but certainly a lot going on, like you said, and looking forward to hashing it all out, especially with our boy Lugs.
I want to say one thing on this subject quickly, because I think all the college football fan bases out there, if you're a fan of a particular school, you certainly keep up with college basketball as well. And we had another court storming incident. So this is just a quick aside. I've been in several arenas where we're calling a game and all of a sudden the court is stormed. And so I've been on the front lines of that, where you're like ducking and just hoping some, you know, pike or Sig Ep doesn't decide to use you as a hurdle to leapfrog onto the court. It can be a little chaotic. I will say that. I've never like feared for my life or anything. But I've seen a number of these. Heck, the most recent one that almost happened, we had a situation calling a game, Tennessee at Mississippi State this year. Mississippi State was ready to storm. And what happened was there was a whistle. It stopped the clock at like 0.5 seconds. It's one of those where everybody thinks the game is over. Wait a minute. No, it's not. There's a few ticks left. So they went back, and that gave it extra time for the security to warden off any potential court storm. This is newsworthy. It's going to be talked about. It already has ad nauseum since Filipowski, the Duke player, got banged up on a court storm. And you got in that, but combined with the Caitlin Clark situation a couple weeks ago. I have, and this does translate to football, because how do you get fined now? If you're like in the SEC, you storm the court, you storm the field. Those are both SEC fines. What is it? 100,000, give or take. I can't, it doesn't matter, because they all have the money to cut the check. It's not a deterrent per se. Really, it comes down to, as a school, do you want to allow the fans? I mean, who could forget Tennessee beating Alabama 2 years ago, tearing down the goalposts and bringing it over to the river, right? Like, I mean, it is really cool. And TV's a big part of it, because it looks really cool on TV, right? If you just read about a court storm or a field storm and tearing down the goalposts, if this was like back in, you know, the 1950s, and then an unruly fan base for the Southern Cal Trojans came down, and oh boy, things got a little bit out of hand, and Johnny took the goalpost and he threw it down.
See?
Yeah, I tell you, see?
Right, this is Scoop Thompson here live up from the press box and the bird's eye view of the stadium.
Those rapscallions, they got a little bit unruly. it doesn't quite... I don't think I've ever used that word. It doesn't quite translate well in print, but on TV, damn it, it looks good. And so coaches and administrators have known that the PR, the positive PR you get outweighs cutting a check for $100,000. It just does. So now, if the only thing that was going to truly put an end to it, and we're talking both sports here, would be if a player gets hurt, or if just like a massive brawl breaks out. And we have had situations where somebody's run onto a field and they got clocked on a field, on a court. There's been videos of that. That hasn't been enough to stop it. This, I'm afraid, and I don't have a hot take on this one. There's nuance to everything. I've always been like, if you control it, like if you just get ahead of it, there's a way to do this and make sure that a block of security guards are all around the opposing team and ain't nobody getting near them. We used to have a thing called law and order, right? Like you make sure you can eliminate this stuff. It's not that difficult. But we don't do enough to make sure that the opposing team, the visiting team, is completely secure. So when you don't do that and you leave coaches and players in harm's way, that is a one-way ticket to get rid of this for good. And I'm afraid that's where we might be headed. I've always been one like, you know, it is a cool thing, and I don't want to see it be eliminated, but if you can't be responsible enough with your security staff to – and there was it was complete – of course, I haven't stormed the court much in Winston-Salem here lately – they haven't had much, but Coach Forbes that's a really good hire. I had him at the SoCon championship years ago when he won that at Chattanooga. Like, that's a great hire, and he's taken a moribund program, and they're good. By the way, they were favored in that game. That's the other thing. Do you really storm a court or a field when you're a 1.5-point favorite? I don't know. That seems to me to be a little weak.
He's East Tennessee, Mike, by the way.
I'm sorry. I said
Chattanooga. Lamont Paris came from Chattanooga.
Yeah, I'm getting my directional Tennessee schools confused.
They're easy to mix up, believe me.
Yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, I just that's been like a hot topic. And again, you're going to get a lot of people that are just easily right away, like a magnet, flock to, this has got to be eliminated entirely. This was always a terrible idea. This is dangerous. This is awful. There's a possibility there's a little nuance here in that
there is.
You could have all of this, JC, but just make sure you do a better job of protecting the visiting team. But I'm afraid with this latest, with all the attention this is getting and the Caitlin Clark, they might just come out and say, hell no, it's over. Don't think about storming the court of the field again.
Yeah, ring the court of the field with security at the end or whatever. But look, I think it comes down to personal responsibility. And I think these days in our social media world where human beings are accustomed to being able to say or do anything they want without consequence and not getting punched in the face, I think that plays into it, especially when you're talking about intoxicated college kids, man. Yeah. We all were in college at once. I assume we all were intoxicated when we were in college at one time. And there's a whole lot of bravery that gets injected into your veins. And I just think it's stupid. Why? I mean, you just won the game. Why are you going to sit there and try to, you know, run into or shove an opposing player, even put your hands on them? And then I also think, you know, hey, look, there is nuance. First of all, preach personal responsibility. Second of all, you know, get that security. I mean, in football, there's 5-6 state troopers that take the opposing coach off the field in normal circumstances.
Right.
Okay. Right. Yeah, you may need to beef that up a little bit. Maybe you need to think about basketball, but we'll get to that. I mean, it is. I agree with you completely. There is a way to thread the needle and make it do some preventative work, preach some personal responsibility, say, look, this is not cool, you know, yeah. And if you do this, you're going to jail. Okay. You're going to jail for assault. And we are the home team's going to press charges. You know, we're going to press charges on you. And maybe that would do it, but who knows? I know Lugs is in, so let's roll with that. But yeah, you're right.
Well, all right, let's get a quick break in, right? Are we taking a quick break?
Oh yeah, quick break.
Yeah, let's get a quick break in. We'll get to Lugs, ESPN's own, one of our favorite friends of the program, and then also the JC5 coming up in the final segment. Lots to get to on this Monday morning installment of JC and Morgan after a quick timeout.
Down here in the South, we don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams, or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs, or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
Hey, folks, want to tell you about our friends at Titan Construction Group really quick. They're a Mid-Atlantic-based general contractor, specializes in retail, restaurant, and office construction. TCG strives to separate itself from other general contractors by adding value every step of the process. From project budgeting to estimation, value engineering to construction, they focus on those relationships and not the transaction. Titan builds partnerships one project at a time. Among their clients are Starbucks, Crumble Cookie, Blake Pizza, Home Goods, 15 plus years experience, based in Midlothian, Virginia, and contracted in Virginia, West Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So get on their website, TitanCGInc.com. That's TitanCGInc.com. Get in touch with Brad if you're in need of a general contractor that focuses on going above and beyond for their clients. That's Titan Construction Group, a proud sponsor of the JC and Morgan podcast.
South Carolinians, this message is for you, as well as for people in Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee. If you think you may need work done to your roof or a new roof altogether, there's one simple name to remember: Elite Roofing and Restoration. South Carolina native Jeremy Johnson has been helping people in the South make sure they have the very best people checking on and building new roofs for over 25 years. Fully licensed, bonded, and insured, they provide the best service possible. Call or email today, 678-781-1998. That's 678-781-1998, or you can go to eliteroofing.com. GA.com. Schedule a no-hassle free inspection today. Wind damage, hail damage, or just wear and tear. Don't settle for second best. Let Jeremy Johnson and Elite Roofing and Restoration take care of it all for you today.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back. It is JC and Morgan here on this Monday morning. Mike Morgan, currently in Gainesville, Florida, and JC Sherbert in Chicago, and Tom Luganville, I assume, is in Charlotte. Either that or a really swanky hotel that just happens to have a Jaws frame picture behind him. Luke, you'd be proud of me, Luke. So I'm here. I've got two basketball games. I'm going to a coaching banquet tonight hosted by Spurrier. He does this thing and does a great job now for the third year in a row. By the way, Steve hadn't lost his touch. I ran into him at dinner last night, and one of the people with him reminded me, and Steve just kind of looked over and nodded his head like, do you know Billy Napier, in order to match what Steve did at Florida in his 12 years in Gainesville, would have to go 81-4? 81-4 to match where Steve was at the end of 12 years.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, Steve is, he doesn't miss a number now. He does not. So, but I had some free time, and I'm just sitting here in a hotel, and I go to the gym. And sometimes when I go to the gym, I don't like to just have music. I like to just put a podcast or take a deep dive. Get ready for this, Luke. You and I are in agreement. Jaws is. If not the best, one of the best movies of all times, right? Seen it Seen it 1,000 times. Could rewrite the script if you wanted me to, if Spielberg needs help. But Jaws 2, not quite near as good. But for a sequel, it's not bad, right?
Like, I agree.
Most sequels are awful. Yeah. So I do a deep dive.
Three
and Revenge are just right. Terrible. Those are a personal. Those that are an abomination to the brand. But Jaws 2, not bad. So there's this guy, and I can't remember his handle. It's this British guy, and all he does is deep dives on Jaws, and he'll interview former cast members. Okay. So he's interviewing all the teenagers that were in that movie.
Oh yeah.
And he's talking about the movie, and I didn't realize this. They, Roy Scheider, wanted no part of that movie. It was a package deal. When they signed him to do Jaws 1, they said, you also have to do Jaws 2 and Jaws 3. So he figured he could get out of that contract. And they said, no. So he had just done Marathon Man. Like, Roy Scheider was becoming a true movie star. He wasn't just Chief Brody at that point. He had to pass up on a little movie called The Deer Hunter to do Jaws 2. So he was going to be in The Deer Hunter, which is like an Oscar movie. With De Niro and
Christopher Walken,
and then the guy who was in Godfather 1 and 2.
Yeah, it was Fredo, who did it while he had cancer.
That's right.
I think Meryl Streep was in that, too.
I think you're right. He was dating Meryl Streep at the time. So he had to pass up on that to do this movie with a bunch of teenagers on sailboats being chased by a mechanical shark. And supposedly... he couldn't have been more difficult to work with. Him and the director would get in fights. He would do a scene, and then in between scenes, he would take off his shirt and put one of those little like aluminum things to help get sun. He'd always working on his tan. And it was kind of his way of saying, blank you, I don't need to be a part of this garbage movie. I should be in the Deer Hunter right now. See, you had that. You had all these teenagers. So this was my deep dive over the weekend. Jaws 2, not Jaws 1, but the making of Jaws 2.
The helicopter scene is actually pretty good.
It is good, yes, where he tries to save the kids, and then the shark eats the helicopter and the pilot.
That actually part was really. Now, not to take a far right turn here, but I'm going to anyway.
Now, your microphone's a little low. Let me just warn you.
It is? My microphone is low?
You're good now. You just need to get closer to it. It's good.
You just need to get a little closer to it. We got JC hot, and we got you low, and I'm somewhere in the middle. Sorry. So let's all just get synergized.
We've got it all covered.
We got it all covered. The varying degrees of audible.
So I'll try to speak up then. I was listening to you guys before you went to break on the whole court and field storming thing.
Yeah.
And I have to remind y'all, there wasn't a damn person there to protect me at Duke against Clemson.
That's right.
Opening game on Labor Day night.
Right.
I will say this, guys. That was, in my 10 years on the field, that was my maybe fifth or sixth field storming.
Yeah.
But what made it so hilarious is that those Duke kids, they let them on the field with 3 minutes to go in the game.
Right.
That was not a field storming when the clock went to zero and everybody jumps over the wall.
Right.
If you go back and you can actually Google it, and I'm standing on the white of the sideline, and there's probably 5,000 Duke students standing on the field behind me and up above in the stands, and not one of them stepped foot on that field until that game was over with.
Right.
Like, I don't know how they had the discipline, the wherewithal, but it was like, all right, well, we're going to storm the field, but in the utmost level of respect, we're going to wait for that clock to go to zero, and then we're going to behave ourselves. Well, it was bizarre, guys.
Do they still have the track around that field, no. Wallace Wade? Okay, last time I
took it out, lowered the stands. They've actually done a great job with it. Like, their scoreboard's phenomenal. Their press box is phenomenal. Obviously, it's a one-level stadium, but they did add some when they took the track out. They've actually done a really good job with that. But, yeah, I was just listening to your guys' commentary because I know it's been an issue in basketball and obviously in football and things of that nature. But, it's like everybody so badly wants to be a part of something, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't. They let that overshadow their conduct and their decorum. And to your point, JC, like, we're in a society right now where there is no accountability. Just go do whatever you want. There's no consequences. You know, no big. So it's no wonder that when something like this happens, everybody's more willing to do it because they don't believe there's going to be any consequence for their actions.
We're also in a mob mentality state of mind where, like, these kids would never do it if it was 10 people storming, right?
No.
But when you're with a couple of thousand, you feel like you can get away with anything. I mean, that's what we've seen the last few years. Like, you just travel in herds and do whatever the hell you want, and there's no consequences. And so it's the same thing as anything else in life. All it takes is a couple of idiots to ruin it for everybody else. So if you could trust that all the students would actually storm, it's not just students. There are some alums that do this too.
Oh, yeah.
Then it would be fine. Just stay away from any. If you see somebody with an opposing uniform, get the hell out of the way.
Yeah.
Don't even get close. It's on you. It's not their responsibility to get out of your way. It's your responsibility. Right. They're supposed to be there. I mean, like, Filipowski didn't do anything wrong. He's just trying to walk off the court. So I think this one, and, you know, we already have football stadiums. I think Clemson's one where, like, the goalposts are electronic, so they hit a button and they automatically go down to the field, so you can't you can't tear them down. Because the biggest concern used to be in football, what if somebody tears down a goalpost and it hits somebody in the head and kills them, right? Yeah. That's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
And the interesting thing about Clemson, you can go on the field after the game.
Yeah, every game.
Yeah, they did. And they're actually, when they storm the field, you don't really hear anything about anything bad happening because they're kind of used to it. Yeah. And then, of course, South Carolina fans stormed the field in 2022 when they were there. And that's kind of nice if you're an opposing fan base because they let everybody else all there. Why not?
Yeah,
that's right.
Why not your rival? So, yeah, that's an interesting thing. I think it all definitely comes down to we live in a time where the word personal response, the phrase, it's two words. Personal responsibility is a bad word. People don't, nobody, you talk about, you know, in education, you know, nobody wants to sit there and talk about it. It's almost weird that it's that's such a staple of American culture or has been for 200 years. And now all of a sudden we don't, you know, oh no, we can't focus on that. We got to focus on things that really don't matter. And
it's always somebody else's fault.
Yeah. Blame it on somebody else or an institution or a group of people. It's ridiculous. So, anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say, who could forget the field storm when we called that thriller at Kent State when the last second field goal over Western Michigan? I mean, I know I was afraid for my safety on a little midweek action 10 years ago during that bad boy.
Stadium?
Dang, I'm golden flashes, man.
Yeah, man. Right. Tom and I know the magic of the Mac in person, and I'll tell you when this is. I'm not taking a dig at the Mac. I love doing those games, and have enjoyed my service time in the Mac. But it really does help you appreciate what the power now four schools have versus what some of the Group Five are dealing with. As I've said before, Tom, it's not Power Five, Group Five. To me, it's more like Group Five is the new 1AA because they are so far behind financially, and therefore they really can't even compete anymore. And we're seeing that widen by the moment.
Well, we're also seeing it widen because the transfer portal is going to make it worse because the really good coaches and coaching staffs in those leagues, Conference USA, the MAC, the Sun Belt, that have gone out and identified late bloomers and guys that are going to develop into something, and let's just say they play early for them, and the next thing you know, they're a redshirt sophomore. Guess what? They put all the work into that guy. Now that guy goes into the transfer portal and is playing for a Power Five school his last 2 years. So you're even further decimating their roster because replacing that type of player at the Group of Five or at the Group of Five level is not the same as replacing him at an elite Power Five school where the drop off is much more minimal. When you're a developmental program, which all Group of Five schools are, and you lose a great player, that's going to hit you much harder with that next guy plugging in because he's not there yet. He may be there. He's just not there right now.
Yeah, you're rushing guys onto the field, you know, in that situation, unless you go raid FCS. FCS rosters are so small, you can get one or two, I think, from FCS. There's great players all over the place. As a lot of people don't realize, you know, sometimes in the portal these days, you'll see a team take a kid from FCS or Group of Five, and he's actually better than the five-star that transferred out.
That's right.
Yeah, you're
especially
like, wow,
the skill spots.
Oh yeah,
the skill spots.
Look at how badly North Carolina wanted Tez Walker. Speaking of the MAC, there's a kid from the MAC, and once he goes to North Carolina, he's immediately their number one wide receiver. It's not even close for Drake May in that and that offense.
Second rounder, first rounder too.
I had App State midweek in the Sun Belt this year, and talking with Coach Sean Clark, and I'm watching this kid on tape. I can't remember his name. He's number 90. He's about 6'5 and a half.
I know who you're talking about.
Nate. 260. What's that?
Is he the big end that they have? Nate Johnson?
Yeah, big defensive end. Yeah, Nate, that's him. He was wearing number 90. And I'm standing there in pregame warm-up with Sean Clark. I'm like, good luck keeping him.
Yeah.
And he's like, he just throws his shoulders up. He's like, I know. Like, what am I supposed to do?
He's actually coming back to App State. I know a little bit about him.
Did he go back? Good for him.
He's from Gaffney, South Carolina. Unless something happens in the second portal. Dude, he was a player that my friend at Florida State that works in personnel begged their staff to take. They wouldn't take him. South Carolina didn't take him. Clemson didn't take him. He goes to App, and as a redshirt or maybe a true freshman.
No, he was a true freshman.
That guy's a freak, man. I mean, he is a complete freak, and I'm like sitting there going, "Why? Wasn't that? I mean, he's a Carolina's defensive lineman. That's a box I have no idea. I mean, I don't. Yeah. Maybe he was a little quicker, but yeah, Nate Johnson fans, keep an eye on this guy moving forward
because he's under the name. Luke's, we were talking in the A block about just all the things that are going on. You know, college football truly mirrors the NFL in a number of ways, including there is no off season. And I guess that's kind of good for us because we always have stuff to talk about. I mean, there's always major things going on, including all the talk about the playoff. And I thought it was a more than subtle storyline that, yeah, the 5+7 model is approved. Da, da, da. Oh, by the way, while they were talking about that and approving it, they also mentioned they wanted 14 and the potential of 4 automatic bids from certain conferences. We certainly know which conferences those are. I'll give you a hint. It's not the Sun Belt and it's not the Big 12. And so it's clear that the moving parts are still moving. When it, like, we'll look at this current format for 2 years, and then there's going to be, dare I say, significant changes after that. Just your thoughts on the whole situation.
Well, the one thing that we don't know yet, and we're going to find out, is anybody capable of being a seed from 8 to 12, of actually running that gauntlet and getting in a position to win a national championship? What it is going to take roster-wise is going to not only have to have massive, massive talent and depth, you're going to have to avoid injury, right? You're going to have superior quarterback play to even have a chance of beating a Georgia or, you know, an Alabama or an Ohio State if you're seed 8 through 12, because you're going to have to play so many games to get there that I don't know how your roster is going to become strong enough. Mike, I did a couple of FCS playoffs this year, and I had South Dakota State, who ended up winning the whole entire thing. And, you know, they only have 63 scholarship players. So they're playing with way fewer guys. And that is an absolute battle of attrition to get through the FCS playoff with the amount of teams that they have. There's a reason why there's only been, what, two teams in the entire country, two or three teams in the entire country win the national championship like the last 10 years at the FCS level? Because you have to be built so different to be able to pull that off. And I don't see how that's going to change under this new model. I if a Cincinnati is going to be there, a UCF is going to be there, a Utah, we could go up and down the list of some teams that could pop in there here and there. To beat a Georgia or to beat Ohio State, you're going to have to win at least 2, if not 3 games just to have the opportunity to play that game. And you're not manned, in my opinion, to be able to do that top to bottom in terms of talent and depth. So the question is going to be, how many more blowouts are we going to see in the early rounds in comparison to what we saw in this first iteration of the college football playoff? Because outside of this last cycle, there was only 1 or 2 semifinal games that were not a blowout. And that's supposed to be the top 4. What happens when we pit Georgia, who would have been 6 this year, against 12? Or 7 versus 11, And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with that.
I think what you're looking at is, it's going to be kind of interesting. And people, I don't think the fact that first round is going to campus sites is being talked about enough. And I think that eventually will be something that's going to lead to expansion, because you win the SEC, and let's say you're Alabama and you beat Georgia. Well, Georgia now gets a home game for losing. And yep. Athens is crazy again, you know, and they're all fired up. Notre Dame gets a home game regardless, you know, and I think those are going to become more valuable. But I think, Tom, the first round, I think, is going to be pretty doggone intriguing. I mean, if you look at it last year, we'd had like Ole Miss and Penn State, you know, games like that, that, you know, in the 7-10, 8-9s, just like the basketball term.
Sure.
I think it's border line up for major bowls, not just the semis, you know, all the quote unquote playoff bowls are now involved. So you're going to have Cotton, Peach, right, whatever, but 1 versus 8 or 4 versus 5, probably maybe 12, I mean, maybe 12 upsets, 5. And I think depending on how many upsets we do have in the first round, like teams going and winning road games, because those teams are evenly matched, is going to impact the level of I guess, competitiveness of those games. Because there is a bigger gap, in my opinion, between 1 and 7 than there is between 7 and 12 in most
instances. Totally agree. Totally agree.
Now, saying that 12 is not the group of 5 thing. But, I mean, think about this. Right. Florida State, and I know Liberty got waxed, but Florida State this year, because of what happened to their quarterback situation, they're hosting Liberty, you know, with the quarterback situation like the Noles had. That's a scary game. I would think, in the first round. So I'm with you. Like, you're going to have all this hype for the first round, a lot of great games, and then it's going to die in the quarters, and that's going to be the key.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, because there is a big gap between 1 and 7 and everybody else, and that's why everybody's wanting to expand. And I'm like, okay, well, ask yourself this question. I understand we want access involved in this process, whether you agree or disagree with that. This is a billion with a B proposition now, right? Used to be what, $475 million was the contract at ESPN. Now it's going to be way over a billion. Don't kid yourself. This is all about money. But those teams, I have to ask myself, are there actually 12 teams that could win the national championship?
No.
I mean, are there really?
No.
Are there 8? Maybe. Mm. Maybe. I think it's much more realistic that there are 8. But 12? Come on.
I agree with you 100%, but I don't think that's the way they look at it. No. I mean, you mentioned money. It's like the basketball tournament. Are there 68 teams truly capable of even making the Final Four? The answer is no. Like, we have Cinderellas, which is great, and basketball lends itself to the upset much more than college football.
Absolutely.
You can have an FAU and a San Diego State in basketball. You can't have that in college football. It doesn't happen. It's the most predictable sport that we have at the top every year. Like, our friend Barrett Salee just came up with, like, a projected 12-team playoff. And of course, the top 4 seeds are the conference champions. So what does he have? He's got Georgia. He's got Ohio State. Does it sound familiar? He has Clemson in the ACC. And because the Big 12 is about to lose Texas and Oklahoma, he's got Oklahoma State. So that's like the one new fresh blood, if you will, in all that. I think the bigger motivation for this is obviously money. Like, that's a no-brainer. But it's the inclusion aspect. And so people say, like, well, why does a Tulane and why do the American and the Sun Belt, why are they so adamant about getting an automatic bid, which I'm convinced is the only reason, Tom, why they're there is the threat of litigation. You can't convince me otherwise. They didn't want to deal with the potential, right? We need to do a whole show one day. It'll bore everybody to tears, but I want to learn about antitrust exemption, because I keep hearing that thrown around, and I used to hear it with Major League Baseball. But it's a real thing, and it does make people very scary in the litigious world that we live in. But just to say that they made it, so you get the money, and then you get to say, you know, you print out T-shirts like Tulane 2024 College Football Playoff. You put up a banner or something. It is a big deal for those schools just to say they got there. I'll make another analogy. In basketball, if you make it to a Final Four and then lose by 30 points in the Final Four, guess what? Yeah. There's still a banner that says Final Four 2020. Right. So in football, there's enough motivation. It's not a written proclamation that, hey, 12 teams, 14 teams can truly win it all. We all know that's not the case, but they believe that it's better to have more inclusion in the process.
Yeah, and I'm fine for that. I'm here for all of the games. The more football, the better. I mean, I really am. I think getting to that point, and we'd have to get on another time to talk about this topic, but we've got to clean up the calendar in order to make that advantageous for everybody, whether it's the portal, whether it's signing day, having to prepare for a college football playoff game, all those sorts of things have got to get ironed out. We got to get out of the muddy water there. And then be able to move forward. And I'll leave you with this, guys. I mean, the news that came out Friday, and I'm sorry, I'm going to have to hop off here in a couple of minutes.
Sure.
But the news
that came out, that was my question earlier about the lawsuit. Yeah.
Oh no. Did his clock just expire?
Well, that
he wasn't getting when he goes dark.
Man,
he goes
the ghost in the machine don't like us this time.
Is he on like a 40-minute? Clock
he
limit.
Timed himself. I gotta jump off. All right.
Well, I wanted to give him a final thing. Is give him a chance to
he's
promote.
He's gonna leave
what
us
doing.
With that. I was like, yeah, that was my question earlier.
That's a cliffhanger.
It was about that thing, and I was like, oh.
That's
for those who don't know. I was gonna ask about the lawsuit. A judge filed an injunction against the NCAA and said you can't keep NIL collectives from going and recruiting athletes. In high school or the portal. So they, take it away, Luke. We've had ghosts on the machine today.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What I was going to say is, you know, the the news that came out on Friday with the NCAA and you know, the name, image, and likeness, and now, you know, you can't enforce it against high school recruiting. And everybody is saying, oh, they're complaining and bitching about, you know, the coaches not being happy about it and this and that. It's not that they're not happy about the fact that this world we're living in now includes name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal and things of that nature. What they're unhappy about is there's no model to actually navigate it. There's no proposition to govern it. There's no blueprint to be able to work down the path to figure out how are we going to police it. How do the rules apply to all? How do you enforce the rules, whatever rules we decide that we are going to have? This is what we are doing right now. This is the equivalent of, at any time in the National Football League, every single moment of the year, at the end of the season, the Denver Broncos say, you know what, Patrick, we're going to pay you this much money, Patrick Mahomes. We want you to come over here and play for the Denver Broncos. And, oh, by the way, Puka Nacua, you had a great year. We're going to pay you. We want you to come. And they just get to walk away, mm-hmm. right? They don't owe the team anything. There's no compensation. There's no buyout. They just get to walk away with the freedom to not have to be accountable for anything at all. That's where the coaches are upset. Coaches realize, hey, the landscape's changed. Name, image, and likeness is here to stay. If we're going to apply it to high school, okay, great. We're going to have to deal with that now too. All right? The transfer portal is here to stay. But you have to have some form of the ability to police it, monitor, govern it, and then have penalties that are so stiff, just like the NFL does with their collective bargaining agreement, that you would never envision, even think of doing something like tampering. Tampering's the biggest problem in college football right now. Everybody says it's name, image, likeness, and the transfer portal. No, it's not. It's tampering.
And it's almost legal because, I haven't heard of any situation where a head coach of a program got dinged for tampering with a player on another program.
Of course.
Hadn't happened. But you know what's going
that
on.
In the NFL, though?
Of course not. No, it's 100% illegal.
Yeah, you're done.
Here's what you hear from, like, it's the same old, it's such a lame argument, but you have these people and they convince themselves that the machine is out to get college athletes and they're all about keeping them down and not letting them get paid. I haven't talked to a single coach in football or basketball that's anti-player compensation. Not one, not zero. But what I have heard is you've got to have some structure. You got to have some guardrails. You want to treat them like pros, and you got to treat them like pros. Pros can't do this. Here's the lame argument, Tom. Here's what you hear. Oh, yeah, well, coaches can just get up and leave. That's their whole thing.
Not for free.
Exactly. There's buyouts.
Buyouts. Yeah.
That's the only argument. All right, I know we're short on time. I really wanted to let you promote what you're doing now. I think it's awesome that you're getting in this space. I can't think of anybody better to shed some light on what's going on in the sport on a more regular basis. So tell everybody how to sign on and see this.
I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm trying to get into this.
There's a plug.
This social media realm. No, listen, I've really kind of thought it. I haven't been a big, you know, self-promoter. I haven't been a big work-related social media guy. I do stuff with my kids and my wife, and I have my own personal accounts. But I've just had everybody pushing me, dude, just go on there, do some shorts, man. Get some feedback. Give some thoughts on what you think. And, you know, and I started really giving it a lot of thought. And I have to educate myself more on this side of it. But I'm just kind of working through doing some things. So, you know, I'm going to do some short-form stuff, some shorts on my YouTube channel, Real Tom Luganville, Instagram, TikTok, I'm navigating through right now. And things pop up, whether it's recruiting, whether it's college football, whether it's legislation, that I'd like to get some commentary or some comment or some critique or analysis. I'm going to do so. I'm kind of on an as needed and as, you know, it fits type of basis, and then hopefully be able to grow it and see if I can get people's attention with my take on sorts of some things. And so we'll see where it goes. I'm just getting started off, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I know I speak.
It's awesome stuff.
Yeah, it is, and I know I speak for our listeners. If Tom Luganville's selling it, we're buying it. We're all in on that. We'll keep tabs on that, and maybe help join forces on that a little bit as well. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah. Tom, as always, we appreciate you taking the time. And remember, among all things, Hooper drives the boat, Chief.
I value my head far more than $3,000, Chief.
For that, you get the head, the tail, the whole damn thing. Awesome. Can't think of a better note to end on than Quint of Jaws. Luke's always a pleasure, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
See you guys. Thanks for
you
having
me. You got it. Later. He is the legend, Tom Luginbill of ESPN. Yeah. Of a number of things now. Yeah. Whenever I have you and him both on, I'm like, these are two of the best player evaluators in the history of the recruiting space.
He's better than I am, though. I mean, because he's done it like Tom can do. Like, here's the difference between Tom and I. Tom can do like who's going like I'm trained to do to project guys using draft stats and stuff like that. He can sit there and look at a specific program, Mike, look at their offensive scheme, their defensive scheme, look at their needs, and plug those in. Like, mm-hmm. And he could also probably do a hell of an NFL draft board as well. And I'm not – I'd probably just flatulate if I did something like that. But he is good. And, yeah, it's good to talk talent with him.
No, it is. And he's always had a good handle on the sport. Again, father was a coach. Luges was a quarterback. And there are some people that cover this sport that truly look at it from all angles and want it to succeed. And then, as we've discussed, there are others that truly feel like every time you read what they say or hear what they say, it's like, here's a guy that truly hates college athletics, but somehow is making $100,000 to write about it or to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, dude, nobody said you had to do it. If you really hate it that much, find another vocation. Find another vocation.
Most of them are like big soccer fans too. That you know, you'll see their tweets and nothing against soccer. I love soccer.
We love soccer. Yeah.
Columbia. We're going to talk some soccer on ITG.
Halfback pass at the center. Center.
Yeah, nothing against soccer, but you can tell because you'll get a tweet from them at 11 in the morning or 8 in the morning. They're drinking a Guinness and they're watching all fired up about Manchester United versus whoever and all that. And it's like, well, that's where your passion is, buddy.
Yeah.
Why you write all this hateful stuff about college football. And I wonder what they thought about Ted Lasso. That's kind of those two worlds colliding. But anyway, that's it. I'm glad we got to that lawsuit thing, Mike. That lawsuit thing's ridiculously
And we'll talk crazy. More about, I mean, basically what they said, and look, I've said this before. I've had multiple coaches say, Mike, this is not NIL. We're buying players. If you want to be honest, we're buying players. That lawsuit just said the quiet part out loud. You are now allowed to, in the recruiting process, just come out and basically let the whole world know, ostensibly, we're buying players. And the NCAA can do nothing about it. Nothing.
And some of these state laws, it's going to come back to bite them, because I'm curious to see if there's any fine print in the law that says a collective from another school is barred by law from soliciting your players. I wonder if that's part of it. Because if it's not, that means so-and-so from the Classic City Collective in Athens can be on the phone with whoever from Florida or Georgia or Tennessee's players and be like, hey, man, what's up? Let's talk for a little bit. Yeah. I mean, this basically, this was crazy. I'm in the collective business. I don't really have the stomach to do anything like that unless it ends up being common. But I kind of have more respect for the game than to sit there and try to poach other people's players. But
Might this be part of the JC5 potentially?
It sort of is. But anyway, yeah, let's just get to that. I'm sorry. I can go on. That was just something that I forgot. I thought about Sunday we were going to talk about. And then I completely forgot about it when we opened, like I always do, and so I had to bring it up.
Well, no, we got it in, and we'll touch on it more. Before we go to the timeout, I want to remind everybody, when renting equipment, it's important to have a local, easy-to-do business with friend in the industry who carries only the newest equipment and creates efficiency for you and your project job site. The team at Site Pro Rentals can do just that. When reliability, service, and transparent pricing matter, you need to use Site Pro Rentals if you want to do work with local, easy-to-do business professionals and are ready for better equipment rental. Call our friends at Site Pro. That's 972-RENT-NOW, 972-736-8669 for better equipment rental. That's Site Pro. Quick timeout, the JC5 on the other side.
Chicken cock originated in Kentucky, like so many other bourbons. And so the resurrection of it, Paris, Kentucky, that's the county seat of Bourbon County. So much of this whiskey was being made in that Bourbon County, put on ships and barges and shipped down Ohio, down the Mississippi, and got to New Orleans, where it got distributed all over the world. And people kept saying, well, hey, I want some more of that whiskey from Bourbon County. And so that's how
bourbon whiskey got its name. And Chicken Cock originated actually in Paris, Kentucky, which is today Bourbon County.
Listen up. This is for construction professionals, contractors, facility managers, or do-it-yourself homeowners. SitePro Rentals is ready to equip your upcoming project. We rent construction equipment for any size job. Boom and scissor lifts, telehandlers, skid steers, excavators, air compressors, generators, even small tools and equipment. SitePro has you covered. If you are ready for better equipment rental, call SitePro and rent from the local, friendly, easy-to-do-business-with equipment professionals. Call 972-RENT now. That's 972-736-8669 to rent the newest equipment in the Atlanta market. Call 972-RENT now or visit siteprorentals.com. South Carolinians, this message is for you, as well as for people in Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee. If you think you may need work done to your roof or a new roof altogether, there's one simple name to remember: Elite Roofing and Restoration. South Carolina native Jeremy Johnson has been helping people in the South make sure they have the very best people checking on and building new roofs for over 25 years. Fully licensed, bonded, and insured, they provide the best service possible. Call or email today, 678-781-1998. That's 678-781-1998, or you can go to EliteRoofingGA.com. Schedule a no-hassle, free inspection today. Wind damage, hail damage, or just wear and tear. Don't settle for second best. Let Jeremy Johnson and Elite Roofing and Restoration take care of it all for you today.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
It's we are back for
the top topics in the sport. We bring the JC Five. Number
Mr.
one.
Announcer doesn't just have great pipes. He's not afraid to be intrusive, and I respect that because he's passionate about introducing one of our favorite segments. You know it. You love it. It's become an international sensation, and often it will dictate the morality of a great nation. It is the JC Five, compiled by a staff of one. That is the great mind of Sherb Nation.
Absolutely, Mike. Got to sit there. Okay, so Josh Pate's tweet. It was like, okay, so this is he called it baked in to discussions. Baked in, it usually means it's like baked into the cake. Like, you know, you got something's in that cake, right? And I don't know. You know, Josh has his opinions and he's well sourced, so I tend to kind of believe what he says. But he says the SEC and Big Ten are going to further expand, move into divisions, have intra-conference playoffs, speculated that, you know, there could be SEC Big Ten brackets to see who gets in the playoffs to face the other schools in maybe a condensed version of the college football playoff with not as many teams, all this speculation. So I must just ask you straight up, SEC takes six teams. Who do you think they should take? If you could have anybody within reason, not Notre Dame, but anybody sort of within reason in kind of a contiguous state and all that.
All right, let me understand this again. We're taking six teams from the Southeastern Conference for what exactly?
To expand to 22.
So we're adding six teams to the
ACC. Yeah, actually, adding six teams. You know, like, so with that bunch of ACC and then the Big 12 and then whoever else, who are you going to eye? Because if you're going to get six more, that's what it takes to make – I think the Big Ten will go to 24, adding
right,
six more.
Right,
to get to those divisions, who are you going to –
This is predicting the implosion and the decimation of the ACC.
ACC, right. And, yeah.
They go the way of the pack. like for years I said that the Kleofkoff doesn't know it, but it's the Titanic sinking, and he's still like telling the band what numbers to play and asking for another brandy as opposed to actually getting the lifeboats out.
You're in charge. Like you're
I'm
Mike
in charge.
Morgan, and
I'm
you're
waving
the one
my wand.
Looking and this is not to piss any other programs off, but who is on Mike's list if he's Greg Sankey?
Right, because well, you know, if I believe the tea leaves, and I say this with no inside source, let me stress that. If you read the tea leaves, Virginia and North Carolina are more of a priority than Florida State and Clemson. So that would be two. But if you're adding six, then maybe you throw in Florida State and Clemson and Miami, and then what? That would leave us with what, one more? Take your pick at that point. You know who you're going with, right?
Yeah. To me, it'd come down to like, are you going to take Virginia Tech or are you going to take NC State?
Yeah. See,
those are kind of the same. You know,
right? I get nervous about a Virginia. If I'm Virginia Tech, I'm like, are we going to wind up being Washington State and Oregon State? Programs that everybody loves, little engine that could, heartwarming stories, great fan bases, some recent tradition. But then when it comes down to the chopping block, you don't get in. The door is caddy barred, and for whatever reason, justifiable or not, you're the odd man out. I hope that's not the case. I love Lane Stadium. I love Blacksburg. I love Hokie Nation. But I wonder if you know, again, if we're adding six, North Carolina, NC State's a thing. Now, I don't think that this is anywhere close to happening, that many teams. That just my opinion. I think that the first off, in the case of Florida State, they don't have a landing spot right now. And this whole notion that they're going to be able to break through that contract, trust me, if they could have done it, they would have done it. They haven't done it. And then secondly, if they're going to pull out an SMU, put your jewels on the table and say, I don't need your stinking money. We'll make our own. We got big boosters all over the place. Well, first of all, that's not been the history of Florida State. If anything, it's been the opposite. And secondly, is the SEC like, we'll let you in if you don't take any of our TV money? I don't know. I think there'd be some resistance to that. I think I can't predict what the Big Ten is thinking, but they're at 18. The SEC is at 16, and I just don't know that in the immediate future there's going to be major movement past that.
Well, and you have to wonder, too, like, so if the Big Ten's going to expand, with the exception of heading south, they've got everywhere else in the country. Their presidents really want, like, the academic people who are still living in fantasy land, in my opinion, really want a Stanford and Cal. So did Stanford and Cal sign their grant of rights away till 2036 when they joined up with the ACC? Right. That's a question. That's a legit question. You know?
And I think to your point, you mentioned the South. That's the only thing that's left. I mean, if the Big Ten is hell-bent on adding, they are basically taking a Conference USA approach. We might as well call this Conference USA. They have already basically told the world, geography be damned. We want brands. And that is a key to remember now. It's not market size. I hear people still using this antiquated, I tell you what, you know, the so-and-so's in a top 20 market. It's not about market. You could live in like Penn State is a brand. You ever been to Happy Valley? That ain't a big city. Alabama's a brand. You ever been to Tuscaloosa? It's not about the city of the size of the city that the university resides in. It's about eyeballs on TV sets and brands trump market size. That is what these conferences want now. And if the Big Ten wants brands, there's no question. Florida State is a brand. There's no doubt about Clemson is a brand. So if you want to go that route, you can, and you can just, again, geography be damned. We're already all over the place. Greg Sankey's been like, hey, look at us. We're contiguous. All our states are connected. The Big Ten has already said, we don't care about all that. We're flying charter flights across the country to play football games, and we'll figure the rest out when we have to figure the rest out.
Yeah, it's gotten crazy. You know, you have to wonder kind of like a place like Georgia Tech, would they fit in?
Well, that's one. I'm so glad you said that.
Kind of get in. You know, they're going to be, everybody's going to say, oh, they got the Atlanta market.
But they're not a brand. Somebody said this on the show that I was on last week. Like, who could resist the market size of Atlanta? Atlanta is Georgia Bulldog territory. Georgia Tech, having lived in the Atlanta now for 14 years, is not even top five fan bases because you've got other SEC schools ahead of them. You've got Florida State ahead of them. You've got Florida, Tennessee ahead of them. And Georgia dominates the landscape of Atlanta. So when you think, oh, Georgia Tech's got Atlanta, they're not a brand. They're not in this discussion. They are kind of left over in the cold, if you will. They're not that much different than Washington State and Oregon State. And that they are not a brand. They just reside in a bigger city, but that's not what these particular conferences are looking for right now.
And those that may bring up Rutgers in Maryland, back then that was the thinking. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And I think actually, although those two teams struggle, I think it's worked. I think it's worked for the Big Ten to get into those markets and become the conference for the top northern fourth of the country. It's kind of crazy. All right, sleeper. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Number two. There we go.
It's official.
Mike, you love the NFL draft. Give me one sleeper quarterback for this draft in your mind.
Ooh, I like that. Look, everybody knows as part of Chief Sports, we're involved in another show, so I'm not just saying this to please the masses because I don't roll that way. I call it like I see it. But I can tell you, if you get Spencer Rattler in the third round, to me, that's a hell of a value pick. It just is. And the real only reason why he's slipping that far, yes, in a paper-thin margin of, well, this guy's an inch and a half taller, and this guy's a tenth of a second faster. Yeah, there is some of that when you stack up Spencer to the top three, four guys that are going to go. But also, people saw this past season, and he didn't put up eye-popping numbers. Well, why didn't he? Because he had no offensive line. Very often, he didn't have much in the receiving core other than Leggett, who was hurt at times, and didn't have a great running game to work with, whereas some of those other guys were dealing with more of a stacked deck and going up against weaker defenses and weaker conferences. That's just one name that comes to mind. The wild card in all of it is Penix. Penix lost a lot of money in the national championship game because he looked bad, and he's had multiple surgeries on key joints in that body, and he's not young. So Penix, who at one point was like, considered a potential top 10 pick, he could actually fall to the second round. That could actually be a thing because I'm hearing McCarthy first round. Yeah, that J.J. McCarthy who handed off more than he threw could be a first rounder. Bo Nix could sneak into the first round for a team that really wants a quarterback, and he is an athlete. So I think that if you got Penix outside the first round, heck, I'm taking that. A Rattler in the second, third round? Yeah, I'm taking that. In terms of other guys, I'm trying to think, JC, of like what other like mid-round guys are going. You know, who's the next? Everybody's trying to find the next Brock Purdy type of guy.
I think a lot depends on his health long-term. Jordan Travis healthy, I think, mm-hmm. would be a guy that surprises, you know.
Yeah.
And we have a long, long bunch of tape on Jordan Travis in college. We have Jordan Travis not looking very good, and we have Jordan Travis getting a lot better. Similar to kind of Jalen Hurts in the passing game. Now, Jalen won all the time and played for national championships and stuff, but I mean, there's a reason to beat him out because the passing game. He goes to Oklahoma, gets better, and lo and behold, look what he's doing with the Eagles. So that would be my guy, but I don't, you know, I'm not married to it. It's such a deep year for quarterbacks. And I think they all have warts. You know, people don't understand the JJ McCarthy thing, but I do. I don't care if he handed it off because why are you going to throw it when you could just run into
right.
people's bahunkus? And I thought when they asked him to throw, he was on target and he can run himself. So I like it. I like him in the first. In a lot of ways, and I'm probably going against the grain on that.
Well, I think you're spot on. I think he is going to go first round, and a lot of people will be like, "Huh? How could that be?" He didn't. because of the reason you mentioned. You know, if you want to take a flyer, you know, here's a guy that's going to go like fourth round. I mean, Sam Hartman was a pretty good college quarterback with two different places, right?
Yeah, Sam Hartman, you know, that's a good one.
You might get Sam Hartman in like the fifth round, the fourth or fifth round. Athletic, you know, did play in a unique offense at Wake Forest. That'll be a strike against him. But those are a couple guys that I could see outside the. I mean, it's not a steal if you get him in the first round.
Yeah.
Those are guys that I think will not go in the first round. Penix could possibly sneak out of the first round. So those would be some of the guys I would look out for.
All right, sticking with the NFL. Three. Sorry, I got to get my timing down on that.
You guys are just, they're not in sync with Mr. Announcer, man. I wonder if he takes that personally.
He probably does. Should the Bears – all right, so I'm going to stick with where you're at because you know about this franchise and I know about this franchise. I know about both franchises. They're two of my favorite franchises. Gun to your head, should the if the Falcons and Bears want to do a deal for Justin Fields, should they do it?
I said this on Atlanta radio last week when it Field Yates of ESPN, he's one of those draft gurus, and he was saying, okay, here's what you do, Atlanta. You give up your number eight pick in the overall draft, which you could get like a Dallas Turner perhaps out of Bama as a rush end, an absolute hellraiser, or you could get a stud offensive lineman, or you could get one of the many stud receivers. But if you decide you can't get the quarterback you want at eight, you give it to the Bears, right? And then you give up a first rounder, a second rounder in 2025. But we're not done yet. Then you give up a first rounder, a second rounder in 2026. The only thing that differentiates this trade from what the Panthers did to get Bryce Young, the Panthers also threw in their best wide receiver in the draft, and on the team, rather. I don't think that's a wise move. I'm not going all in on Justin Fields. I'm sorry.
And I think Justin Fields, you know, he gets a. I think Chicago should stay with him for one more year, just because I'm not sold on Caleb Williams. You know,
you mentioned that a few times, and you're not alone on that. There's strong sentiment still that Drake May could go ahead of him. That's not a done deal.
But you know how superstitious people are, and the Bears went down an infamy drafting Mitch Trubisky from the University of North Carolina over Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Yeah. Nine spots above, traded up. You know, no, they didn't trade up. Did they? They trade up to get Mitch Trubisky. I think they did. So anyway,
I believe so. Yes.
That's gone down. So they kind of look and they see the baby blue and they're like, oh, wait a minute. Nah. Now Drake May's a different animal than Mitch Trubisky, certainly. But if I'm the Bears, I'm sticking with Fields one more year, and I'm trading the pick for that type of thing. I don't think you can trade Justin Fields. I mean, I've seen some people speculate you trade Justin Fields and you get a second rounder this year and a fifth rounder next year.
I've heard the same thing. Not second and a fourth.
The Falcons trade the whole future of the franchise for Justin Fields. That is beyond.
No. Not for Justin Fields. For Caleb Williams.
Oh, so they want the one. They're getting the number one.
Yeah. For Justin Fields, it's like the best offer I've heard is a two and a four. Ain't nobody giving up first round picks for Justin Fields. He hadn't proven.
I would go the Redskins. I would trade all these teams that need quarterbacks. If I'm the Bears, I'd trade with the Redskins so they can bring Caleb home because he's a DC guy. And I would trade, and then I would take Marvin Harrison. I would get myself in position to take Marvin Harrison.
Well, that's the safest pick in the draft.
Yeah, and then at nine, you go get an offensive tackle or defensive tackle or whatever. All right, we got to move on to number four.
Okay.
Number four.
So, Mike, we had somebody floated 14 teams out there for the playoff. Who's pushing this? Who decided 14 was the number, in your opinion?
Conference commissioners who want more teams from their conference to be in this thing. If they had their way, I'm convinced if Greg Sankey and Petitti had their way, there'd be no automatic bids. It'd just take the top 14 teams, and it'd be loaded with SEC and Big Ten teams. But that would piss off a lot of other people, and the threat of litigation would be there. And so what they're saying now, I think, is the feeling is two more teams, that's two more SEC Big Ten teams. Again, I'm not in that room, and they're not going to say that publicly, but that would be my guess. That's who's pushing for it.
Yeah, I think so, too. 14 was just a weird number instead of 16 to me. It's almost like – we want more, but then we don't want the SEC, blah, 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 blah. So it's kind of weird. All right. So
number five,
wrapping up, we've very familiar the last few years, 20 years with Michigan State as a rivalry. Mark D'Antonio had a lot of success against the Wolverines. That program fell on some hard times, bad hire, bad fire. They got a guy named Jonathan Smith from Oregon State. I'm pretty high on, right? As a more with less guy. Michigan also had a coaching change, promoted Sherrone Moore in 3 years. Who's doing better in the eyes of their fan base, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State or Sherrone Moore at Michigan?
My fear is for Sherrone Moore, who seems like a really good guy and certainly was worthy of the hire. My fear is that to live up to what Harbaugh just did is going to be almost an impossible task. So you've now given people a taste, and you know my theory, when you show fan bases the high watermark, they now think that should be the norm. So they now believe that Michigan has arrived, and you just hand off the baton to the assistant, and he does the same formula that just won Michigan a title and just beat Ohio State 3 years in a row. And I don't think that's going to happen. So based on that, will Michigan have more wins than Michigan State? Yeah. But based on expectations, I would be more nervous about that hire as opposed to what you got at Michigan State and you just followed a disaster. Like, this is like when you're performing on stage, you want to follow the kid that, you know, wet his pants and can't carry a tune and got stage fright. And like, yeah, I could do better than that. I was nervous before, but now I can do better than that. Well, following Mel Tucker is like following that kid who just wet his pants on stage. So by the basis of your question, I'll say Smith and Michigan State.
Ah, totally fair. All right, that does it for the JC5, and I guess our show, Mike. This
that
was fun.
Does it. This is a lot of fun. This is always fun. Thank everybody again. You do a better job of doing this than me, JC, but I'll give it a shot. We're on everything. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Play, and we're on Spotify, which I think is our number one carrier in terms of how you people the visual, it's not about seeing us, but it is about just seeing some of the things that are concocted on the screen that I think are pretty cool. So when I listen to a show or a podcast, I like the YouTube version, but that's just me. You can also check out the website, jcandmorgan.com. We'll start getting more into the mailbox here in the upcoming weeks, and we've got more great guests for you coming up. Our thanks again to Tom Luganville. Our thanks again for all of you in the thousands throughout the national landscape of college football that chews us each and every week. For JC, for Mad Dog, Phil Molinax, Mike Morgan saying so long. We'll see you next time on JC and Morgan.